Okay, yeah, we are back. We are live, and welcome to anybody that's watching. Tonight we are talking with Robert Rye. Is that how you say your name?
Riggy. It's an Italian name.
Oh, Riggy. Okay, so it's each one kind of has its own emphasis. Each letter.
Right. That's okay. It's fine. I've been called worse.
No, that's fine. I try my best.
I know. No, you're fine.
So, anyway, Robert, it's good to have you on tonight for us and have you as a guest. And so, just so everybody knows, what got you interested and started in the paranormal?
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Thanks to this wonderful group for having me on. And right now I'm in Pacifica, California. Beautiful, beautiful day here along the Pacific Ocean. My first experience within the paranormal field was when I was 4 years old. And being Italian and Spanish and that spirituality and that culture. I'm also Roman Catholic, so my spirituality was based on that. I don't try to convert anyone to any religion or faith at all, but for me personally, okay. I must also tell you guys and everyone that I'm gay. I'm very transparent. I want people to feel comfortable with me, okay? It's very important to me. It really is. And so my first experience was when I was 4 years old, and it's just gotten stronger over the years. My parents told me to be very, very careful when I was there. I was born in 54, 58 was my first experience. But back in the 60s, I could have been taken away from my parents. They got, you know, people would think I'm crazy and all sorts of things, you know? You know, many, many years before that, many, many years, our culture was into, like, seances and dipping tables and stuff like that, so I was told this to kind of, like, stop it, and they agreed that I had these gifts and talents. Like, they just got stronger and stronger over the many years. And so I also have a master's degree in forensic psychology and clinical socialist from the University of Florida. And so I combine those two disciplines with my psychic abilities and my mediumship, and they work beautifully together. And so the things I do within the field, they're very, very vast and different. When I was at the University of Florida, I went to the department head. And the department head knew that I was a psychic medium because we had gone places and things like and such. And I had reached out to them asking them if myself and several other psychologists could go and interview Ted Bundy while he was on death row.
Oh, wow.
And and so I wrote a letter to Ted and to his lawyer and also to the warden. And 2 weeks later, I received a letter from Ted Bundy, from the warden, and from his lawyer, that they agreed to it. They agreed for myself, three female psychologists, and another male psychologist to go and have 90 minutes with him. 90 minutes. And that's a whole different story also. But let me tell you, there is a very, very dark side, besides him being a murderous and, you know, heinous person. There's a dark side. There is someone who was his mentor, never met him before, but read a lot about him, okay? And we can talk about that in the later days. And also about how he got into the dark side of the paranormal, let's say, okay? And so that was an incredible experience. For 30-plus years, I was a criminal profiler for the state of Florida, so I saw the worst of humanity in the best. Also, I mentor 15 children in this I will call Children of the Paranormal. These parents have heard me on different podcasts, and so they would reach out to me thinking that their child was crazy or whatever was going on, right? And so then I would wherever they lived, I would meet with them, meet with the parents, meet with the child. And so these children are really struggling. You know, they had no one to go to like I did back in the 60s, so I had no one to go to. And so I mentored these children. these children, several of them attempted suicide because they didn't know what to do. And two of them did self-mutilate themselves. They would cut themselves all the time. They were very depressed, you know, because here, you know, here they would go to school and they couldn't concentrate because of seeing spirits inside of the room, outside, you know, mm-hmm. you know, outside, you know, playground and outside the windows and everything like that. And these kids were really struggling. They had no one to go to. They became loners. Their parents didn't know what to do with them. But by the grace of God, they contacted me. These children now were doing beautifully. I instructed them how to turn it on and turn it off. Okay. And so that's another program in itself too. And we still meet to this day during COVID that we Zoomed and stuff like that. And the kids have each other's telephone numbers. And so, you know, so they're networking, so the parents talk to each other. A lot of these folks are very poor. Okay. And so the folks who could afford, and myself, that we would make sure that everyone was involved. We usually went to the specific home or to the town of where the families could not travel to, okay? Because mm-hmm. I wanted everybody to be involved. So, and I still do that to this day. Okay, so that's another story.
It sounds like it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. You're taking on these children that need guidance because their parents obviously don't understand what's going on with them.
Right. And a lot of them.
And I can understand. I actually do have an understanding of where you're going with that because myself personally, I used to see spirits all the time. I kind of still do. And I was always afraid of telling people whenever I was younger because I was always afraid it's crazy.
Right. Oh, yeah, very much so. And here I'll be 67 in November. And so I learned 50 years ago how to turn it on and off. And so I instruct these children of how to turn it on and off. And so now their parents understand. The parents network with each other. So if they have any questions, they can always contact me. And so that's good that the parents connect together so they're not alone as much as, you know, as like the kids do, you know?
Yeah.
And so I do that, which is very close to my heart, because I know how it feels to be alone, experiencing those things, and there's no one to talk to. You know, except my mom and dad, they realized my gifts and talents, but again, during that time, it was not the right time, you know, to talk about it. And I've also been involved in two exorcisms that were sanctioned by the Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago. And so we can talk about that because there's two different types. One was with a man, the other one with a woman, but the woman was psychiatrically ill. She had what they would say split personality. We don't use that term anymore, but most people know that.
Multiple personalities.
Yes. Only one was possessed. Only one personality. So we had to integrate the other four. Okay, but we had to leave the one that was possessed alone, and that was difficult. It was difficult. We can go into that, and we can go into that another time also. And also, what is very close to my heart that I volunteer at a hospice, and this hospice ministers to children in their last days of their lives, and the parents, so when I get called in, it's usually like several hours, maybe 10 hours before these children leave this earthly dimension to the heavenly dimension. The parents understand who I am and what I do, and they're very, very open to that. Hi, Michelle. Oh, my dear friend, Michelle from Ohio, bless her soul. Love you, honey. Anyhow, so all my contacts are possibly watching this tonight. So.
Oh, that's fine.
But anyhow, and Michelle and I have a story also, and that's another story in itself. But anyhow, so I'm called to help these children, and help these children also their parents. And that somebody asked me, Robert, how can you do that?
Uh-oh.
I'm back.
Okay.
Those pesky spirits. You just never know about those pesky spirits. You
know, oh, I know. You know. Yeah, they messed with me just before we started. Now they're messing with you.
Yeah, that happened. And so children, some of these children, I mean, these children have no idea I'm coming, okay? And a lot of the children, when I walk through the room, they will say, what took you so long? These children have no idea that they sent something. They sent something that someone was coming to visit.
Yep.
And somebody said, Robert, how can you do that? How can you be with some, especially a child, you know? They said, oh, Robert, you make me strong. No, it has nothing to do with being strong. I believe that I was called to serve, you know? And so I am there for a specific reason, to help these children as well as helping the families. Okay, so we can discuss that another time also. And so there are many, many things that I do within the paranormal field. And every day I learn something. You know, I'm not an expert. I'm not an expert in anything. I'm not. When I hear some of these, I don't watch these shows on TV anymore, so they drive me fucking nuts. They really, really do, you know? And they're all theatrics, for God's sake. They are, you know? And so I don't watch those things. There would be people talking about this and that, and underneath their name, they would say, expert. My hind end, they're an expert. Give me a freaking break. The paranormal field... is not an.
I like the way you think.
So. Right.
No, I honestly believe that there isn't a single person out here in this paranormal field that actually is or could be considered an expert, because it doesn't matter what you know. There's always things that you don't know that you're learning every time you go out and do something.
Amen. That is so freaking true, you know? And so they say, oh, you know, they're an expert, and that just drives me nuts. Because the paranormal field is not an absolute science. You can have
people
the paranormal, you know, you can have 100 people together. Each of us will see and feel something totally different.
Yep.
You know?
And the reason behind that is each one of you are tuned into a different portion.
Wavelength.
Different wavelength, it's like a person that's colorblind. Okay, the person that's colorblind is not going to see every color of that rainbow. They're going to see black and white or gray. Okay,
right.
But the other person next to them that's looking at the same rainbow is going to be able to name off different colors, or the person after that is going to be able to name off a couple of the colors and not know the other colors. It's kind of like that.
Right, and it's very, very true. You know, so somebody says, oh, Robert, you're an expert. No. I learn every day of my life. You know, like now I'm in, you know, this group is called, it's called Paranormal 101 Education. And I'm within that group, okay? It's Mike Cardenas' group from Midnight Paranormal Society, San Antonio, Texas. Wonderful, wonderful group, wonderful guys. And so every day I learn something. I learn something about the Ouija board. A couple of weeks ago, that there is a light Ouija board and there's a dark side, you know, a dark Ouija board. I had no idea. I thought a Ouija board was a Ouija board. You know what I mean?
Or also known as a witch board.
Yeah. You know, I don't use that. A lot of my friends are practitioners of it. God bless them. You know, life is hell. Oh, do you? Use it?
I haven't used them in a while. It's been quite a while, actually. But if I find the right person that I know is going to be able to help with channeling, I will use it.
Okay, so you know, and so that's good. But for me personally, I stay away from that. But if like I said, it's true. You know, there are different practitioners that do, and God bless them. You know what I mean? God bless them for doing that. I know a lot of people use dowsers, you know, those things that cause, you know, everything. I don't know how to do that. I would like to learn sometime, but I don't use them, you know. And when I see other people using them, God bless them. You know, they have that ability, you know, and I don't. So we all have our gifts and talents, you know, and our abilities. And so that's why the paranormal field is not an absolute science. And I hear these people say, there's even people that are experts in EDP. My hind end. My butt. You know, that just drives me freaking nuts. Well, you know?
EVPs can be pretty much anything, too.
Right. Yep. You know?
How about the ones that say that they're a Bigfoot expert? You know?
When
proof of a Bigfoot hasn't even been found yet.
Right. No, it hasn't.
So how can you be an expert?
Right.
You haven't seen one.
Right. Now Joe brings the cryptids in. We're talking... We're talking more of psychic here, and Joe brings in cryptids.
And it's fine. You know, it's fine, because do I believe in this?
That's okay. I'm just messing with it.
Believe. Right now,
yeah,
right.
I believe
because it's proven.
Well,
right.
I know that.
Right. Do I believe in Bigfoot? Anything is a possibility. It is, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Within the realm of possibility, do I believe it? Would I like to go out into the forest? No, because I don't like flies. I don't like ticks. I don't like snakes. I don't care for spiders. You know, I'm a real sissy when it comes to that stuff. But would I like to meet one in person? Oh, of course I would. Good Lord, I'd probably grab myself or pee my pants.
Especially if they are intelligent. I would absolutely love to be able to talk to one.
Yeah. Right.
So Robert, what is your thoughts on crystals?
You know what? I don't deal with them personally, but a lot of practitioners do, and God bless them. I mean, I have nothing to do with. I mean, I can say that. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I don't. But for me, I don't use them. I know that when I was in Arizona, there's a place called Oak Creek Canyon. It's very sacred to the Diné or Navajo, to the Hopis. They believe that a crystal has tipped over, and it's a very, very, it's a very holy site. And so when I went there, I experienced different things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I don't deal with crystals. I don't, and I know very little about them. There's so many colors for so many reasons and such like that. Somebody asked me about tarot cards. Hell, I can't even play old maid. How in the world would I even do a tarot card? You know what I mean? You got them right there.
I do readings with tarot as well.
How long have you been doing that? How long you've been doing
that? Okay, well, Robert, I started all this when I was about 15. I started getting involved in this, and I learned a lot throughout the years, up until whenever I got together with my now ex-wife. But at that point, that I just kind of put everything aside because it freaked her out, and I didn't want her. I didn't want to screw up any kind of relationship we had. So I put everything aside, and I kind of stayed away from it. Well, that's why she's my ex-wife now. She made the decision that we were done. So I here recently, in the last couple of years, decided to get back into practicing my religion, which is Wicca. And once I did that, things started opening up again for me. It was very, very strange, but it felt right at the time. So, but yeah, I've been doing it since I was like 15. So yeah, with the tarot cards, I can do readings. I believe in the power of the crystals, how they hold energy and expel energy for different users to be able to use. Because a crystal is all natural. It's part of the earth itself, and that's what Wicca and paganism and witchcraft actually is. It's a form of religion that is a belief in the earth having a spirit of her own. And everything in this earth and on this earth has a spirit. So
that's great. So just now, at my age, being in the field probably, 60 plus years, I learned something, you know? And so every day is a learning process for all of us in the paranormal field because it is so vast. It is so vast.
Oh, it covers so much.
Yeah, it does. So, you know, so I try to explain to people that we need to be open to all of that. We can agree to disagree respectfully. You know, people talk about paranormal unity. Oh, my God. Those are the same fools that will go out and condemn someone else for doing whatever. I have been crapped on by many, many of our brothers and sisters within the field. I really have.
And it's wrong to do that. You know, everybody has a different level of ability.
Well, their own style of investigation.
Right.
Is that joke?
Their own style of investigation. I mean, we've seen...
Oh, yeah.
We've seen some, let's just put it, we've seen some pretty amateurish stuff. But, you know, that's where it starts. You know, they start this way and they keep improving. Some of them don't. Some of them will stay in the same rut. And others will sit there and improve when they can.
Right.
You know, because sometimes it's not easy when your equipment is so expensive, too.
Right. And that's one thing that a lot of the teams that I connect to, a lot of the teams that contact me, are teams that really can't afford a lot of the equipment. And let me tell you, they're the most professional people because they do it because of their passion. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
People who don't have a damn dime to their name will be some of the most professional people within the paranormal field. But nobody talks about them because... You know, because they live on a shoestring. You know what I mean? You know?
Yep.
So I, you know, so when a group, you know, asks me to come and help them, they'll say they can't pay me. I don't want a dime, for God's sake. These are my gifts and talents, and I will help those specific groups who really are struggling. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, that is one thing. You just said something that strikes a chord with me as well. That is one thing that I wholeheartedly believe, that if you've got an ability like this, that you're given that ability to use it to help others and not get rich from using it. That's why when I see these people out there, these psychics and these mediums and these people that are saying that they're this kind of thing and that kind of thing, and they chart, like, okay, I might get in trouble for saying this, but Long Island medium.
Oh, Teresa Caputo. Oh, my God.
She used her gifts, allegedly gifts, to get a television show and become a millionaire. Excuse me. If you're going to have gifts like that, you're going to be helping people without charging them and without using them.
Right. Well, I have a story about Teresa Caputo. I do. Okay, she's Italian, and I'm going to call her out a bit. All I know is that when she goes around the country and does her thing, she also brings her clothing line, her jewelry line, her little shoes and all
Thank
that
you.
Old crap. And anyhow, that's shitty. Oh, excuse me. That's crappy. But anyhow,
there's no censorship. You can speak as anything you want that your mind says, you can say it.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. What she does, a friend of mine, now I have only been to one of her gatherings that cost like $75. I didn't want to pay that, but somebody paid it for me, so I went. And so you can tell I'm a real Italian. And so anyhow, I didn't want to spend the damn money just to, you know, just to have her, you know, you send her kids to Harvard or wherever. But anyhow, she was going to do readings, okay, from the group, from this big arena.
Yep.
Specific people were chosen, and God forgive me, but I'm telling the truth, that they had to write something about themselves and what was going on. And Teresa verbatim said the same damn thing that was on these sheets of paper. Really. Mm-hmm. You know, she can have all the... She can have all the feathers she wants and all the sage and all that bull crap and everything, please. She knew there was a niche and she got into it. And she's just like a Sylvia. She's just like a Sylvia Brown. Oh my God.
That's another idea.
Oh my God. She drove me to heroin. No, I'm just joking, but She drove me freaking nuts. You know, Montel was going in the gutter. She came on and he, you know, people watched him and everything, you know. But she, you know what did her in that I remember this show. And she told us, like, this lady goes about my daughter and everything. Anyhow, Sylvia said, your daughter's dead. I would never say that. Even if I had the inkling, I would go quietly and say, this is what, but I could be wrong. You know what I mean? No psychic medium is 100% correct. None of them. And Amy Allen, oh my God, she never, never, never has anything wrong. That's another story in itself, because I have a family member that was on the dead files of, yes, and yes, my name is and my name is mentioned. But anyhow, and so Sylvia Brown, it just, oh my God. And then it was, oh, and remember years ago, Miss Cleo. Oh my God, Miss Cleo.
Yeah, Miss Cleo.
Oh my God, she was a hot mess. She knew how to make a buck during that time, and she did it. Unfortunately, she ended up in federal prison. But anyhow, that for me personally, my gifts and talents come from my creator, my God, and I use them wisely and appropriately. I really, really do. And I combine my psychological training and education, being a psychic and my mediumship. I have all those disciplines work together, and they work beautifully. When I go into a residential setting, I bring an onion with me, because an onion has many layers, right? We have to
go to the
core of that. We got to get to the core of the situation. God bless these teams on one hand, but they make me, they just make my ass tired. They go in there with all this equipment. They really don't even talk to the people that are experiencing horrible things. And I tell these groups and I do seminars and such that we are there to help the family. We are there to help the family. It's not all about them. Also that we must validate what the family is experiencing, because it's their story.
Yep.
You know, it's their experience. Just because you don't get it, just because the spirits don't come out like Barnum and Bailey, you know, circus animals,
they're not performance animals. The spirits are not performance animals. They're not there to perform for you. They're there to do what they're going to do. If they feel like they want to move an object, they'll move an object. They would feel like they want to open a door, they're going to open that door. If they don't feel like doing a damn thing for you since you're there and you want to catch them on film, they're going to just sit there and laugh at you.
Oh, they do. Oh,
that's all it is.
And so these groups, and these groups will tell the people who are really suffering, who are really experiencing something, we don't have any evidence, and so there's nothing really going on. Oh my God, that just makes my ass even more tired, for God's sake. You know what I mean? I'm sorry?
You were there on the wrong day then. You just didn't catch it at the right time. Or maybe they didn't.
No, it wasn't the wrong day, Joe. You were there, and they just didn't want to do a damn thing to prove you to be right.
Right. I mean, it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have we had a paranormal investigator on, and they say, you know, 90% of the time you're sitting in a cemetery talking to yourself?
Yeah, pretty much.
You know.
You do an investigation in a cemetery, 90% of the time you're sitting there leaning against a headstone, leaning against a tree, or sitting on the hood of a car or whatever, and you're just talking to yourself because you got your voice recorder there trying to catch an EVP.
Right.
And the only thing you're going to hear when you play it back is either the owl hooting, crickets chirping, or you
breathing,
talking to whatever you think you're talking to.
Right.
With no response.
Right. And it's very, very true. So I tell these groups that to always validate what the people are talking about, even if you don't get a damn thing, you have to validate because it's their experience. What I also do is that I follow up with these families. I just don't leave them cold. You know what I mean? I continue. It's a process. In my in my experience, that there is going to be an emotional side or a psychological side that has led to them experiencing these paranormal happenings. It could be a traumatic, it has to be something traumatic. It could be a death, a sickness, a loss of job. It could be anything, right? It could be the house. It could be the land, right? It could be numerous things, you know? And so I continue with these families, you know? Or like some groups will say, oh, yeah, there's a lot of stuff here. Well, then they leave them. They leave them. But what the hell? You know, you have to realize that they called you for a specific reason, not for you to get the evidence. It is there because they asked you to come because they need help.
Yep.
That evidence, and you show them the evidence, oh, hell, they hear the ticking and the knocking and all sorts of things all the time, you know? So we have to be there. We have to be compassionate. Also, my brothers and sisters, and also my sisters and brothers who are listening to this, is that there should be a difference within a team for people who do residential as well, you know, and other team members should do the empty, vacant building. They're totally, totally different. Totally different. The people who, you know, the folks who do the residential, they have to be compassionate enough, you know, compassionate enough to understand what the family's going through. You know what I mean? So there's two different venues. There's residential, and then there's going to these old abandoned asylums and all that crap and everything, right?
Well, when we go out and do stuff, we've done a couple of residentials, and we actually caught a few things on camera and some EVPs. But when we do the residentials, yes, we are understanding and we're compassionate, and we will talk to the people about what's going on. The way I look at it is, if I get to get into an asylum or make a building or cemetery into that, where there's like nobody there that I really got to talk to other than the spirits themselves, if I catch anything, I'm going all out. it's going to be, let's go for it. But anytime you're there to help people, and that's one of the things that I've actually talked to Joe about too. Is when
we do a lot of research.
Yeah.
You know, we try to help by doing a lot of research for them, finding out what we can find. We listen to their stories. I mean, hell, the first one we did, we were in contact with them for many days, every day for a while before we actually made the trip to their house.
Right.
And that's what one should do. That's what one should do, my friend. You go there, you research everything about the house, research the land, the city, if they're next to a railroad, if they're next to a cemetery. If they're next to like Hy-Vee or anything like that, or slaughterhouse or whatever, you know,
that place still baffles me.
It's still a little baffling. We couldn't find a lot on their house.
We couldn't find a lot on the house. Town itself has a very strange history, and I couldn't find enough documentation to prove any of some of the stories that I was reading, you know, and no newspaper articles. I mean, I'd have to, this was also during the time when I was doing this research, you know, we were all on lockdown. So you couldn't go anywhere at the time. Places were closed. All the public buildings were closed. You know, I would have had to go old school and go to like the historical society for the town and probably look on microfiche to find what I was looking for.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I just had a weird incident. It went like three times. It kept telling me that it was disconnected, and I hadn't even touched it.
Oh, I didn't see anything, but I wasn't looking.
Right. And for probably 30, 40 seconds that you guys were garbled, I could not understand anything you guys said whatsoever. I couldn't, you know. So that happens. I always say it's a damn pesky spirit that had nothing to do but just mess with us. You know what I mean? They mess with us. We mess with them. But also, I was going to tell you guys, that I did several internships at several state hospitals around the country. Woodward State Hospital School in Iowa, and also in Clarinda, Iowa, which is not too far from the Axe Murder House, which I was there in Valesa, Iowa, last weekend. I was there last weekend. You know, so if you guys ever get a chance to go to Valesa, Iowa, please do.
We kind of did, but it was full. All the spots were full.
When we went in July, and we went with a guy down in Illinois, Dale Kaczmarek. He comes on and fills in occasionally for us because sometimes we have problems with guests not showing up. But we hooked up with him and went over to Iowa, and we did the Buddy Holly crash site.
Say the music died.
Oh, yeah.
And then we went from there to I can never pronounce it right. Joe, what's the name of it?
It's in Maxwell, Iowa. It's called Farrar School.
Okay.
Oh, Farrar School. Now that is a good place to go to. Farrar is excellent. It is.
Yeah, we were there.
Here's something for you, Robert. When we were at the crash site, I've got two EVP, voice recorders in here.
Right.
When we were at the crash site, I had one fail on me. The other one recorded just fine. Mm-hmm. And that's the only equipment I took out there. When we got to the school, I had the other voice recorder fail on me. I've got a body camera. Had it set. It recorded audio only, no video. I have a handheld video camera, or you can put it on a tripod. It worked. Right. It worked until I changed the battery. The original battery it was in it died. I put a new battery in it. It still showed that it recorded, but none of the video after I changed the battery would actually play. I've got full files. I mean, I pull them up, and they're full files, but they will not play. It says it's the wrong format. And then my laptop. I was trying to get into my laptop, and I know I was using the proper password.
Right.
Four times I typed it in, each, two different times. There are two different ways, with the capital and without the capital, and it would not let me in that laptop. Now, here's the best part. After we got home and I got some rest and I checked out all my equipment the following day, every single piece of the equipment worked just fine. And that laptop, I was able to get into that laptop my first try. Explain that one to me.
Yeah, Clear Lake, Iowa is where you went to the crash site. Right. Clear Lake, Iowa.
Yep. Yep,
very interesting place. Yes. Yeah. And the Farrar Grade School. That is phenomenal. It is.
I definitely want to go back to that school.
That place was extremely interesting. We actually had some activity happen.
In fact, Joe and I were standing on in the upper area where you could look out over the gymnasium.
Right.
And Dale and one of his people were doing Facebook Live. So Dale was talking on Facebook Live.
He was doing history lessons to people.
Kind of. And then one of his other people were standing next to me, and I didn't have a camera at the time, and I wish to God I did.
Neither did I.
And there was Joe. And she pointed, and this was early on when we first got there. She pointed to the ball that was behind Dale, and it's like, that ball's moving. And I looked down, and sure enough, the ball was moving. Somebody had walked over and just, batted it.
Yeah, we were still setting up our equipment.
That place is off the chain. It really is. The Farrar School is those places that people should go to while they're in Iowa.
I take it you've been there.
And we were in the
We were
in the boiler room, and that's when Dale had that. What was that device Dale had in the boiler room?
Phasma box.
I can't hear you guys.
Uh-oh.
You guys are very garbled.
Okay.
I cannot understand.
Okay. Yes. We were in the boiler room at the time, and Dale, the other guy that was with us, he has this program on his laptop. It's called Phasma Box. It uses the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth in the laptop, and it scans frequencies, and it picks up on any voices that come through. Sometimes you might get a radio station or something like that. So you plug an external speaker to it so you can hear it very well. And he was running that in there. And I actually caught a lot of the stuff that was coming through on audio.
Mm.
But there has to be something there. I mean, just the fact that when I walked in there, I went in there by myself. Lights, all the lights off, nobody with me. I had my camera and I had a flashlight. And I went in there by myself. I don't get spooked. I've experienced way too much in my life. I don't get spooked anymore.
Right.
I used to when I was younger. I don't anymore. So I'm in there and I could literally feel the negative energy in that room. It just I walked through that one door and it just felt like somebody had taken and threw an extremely heavy wet blanket right over top of me.
Mm.
And I had
to leave the building.
And that happened.
I'm sorry? I didn't hear what you said, Robert.
And that happened. Oh, and that happens a lot. You go to one room, it's real heavy. You go to another room, it's very light. You know what I mean? And so every room can be different, or it could be the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, you know, so when you walk into a room and you feel that heaviness, I mean, your body reacts to that. You know that you're experiencing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is. It sends chills down your spine, your hairs, you know, whatever. You know, so it's very cool, you know?
Well, I could feel it. I had my voice recorder with me too. You know, I had and when I felt that heaviness and I felt that it was happening, I actually walked around a little bit inside the room and then I started provoking. And that's when my equipment started failing on me.
So I
started provoking at that time, you know, being like really aggressive, saying, I don't believe you're here, or saying, if you're here, do something. I want you to do something, you know, show me the proof that you're here. It just, you know, doing the provoking, I was by myself, so it would target me and nobody else. And I think that might have been the trigger which caused whatever it was to start messing with my equipment, making it start failing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think anybody else's equipment failed.
Right. And so that happened. I mean, it could happen to the next person next to you, or maybe, you know, just like I said, that your equipment for you personally is just going to be affected. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's very, very possible. It's very true. But when I was in Iowa, when I was at the University of Florida, I did several internships. One of them was at Woodward State Hospital School. Okay. So we're talking like 75, 76, right? Back then, State Hospital in Iowa, it had 1,500 patients in this very small town, right? They were still using four-point leather restraints. 150 people on every ward. It was massive. Also, I've been to the State Hospital in Phoenix, Arizona, did an internship there. I was at a leprosy colony down in Houma, Louisiana also. And let me tell you that when people go in to investigate in state hospitals, that they'll say, oh, somebody just pulled my hair, or they scratched me, or whatever. My brothers and sisters in the paranormal field, remember, these poor people were placed there. They did not have any choice at all. A yep. lot of these children, people, the babies, when they were left at the gate, and back when you could do that, right? Let me tell you, when you get 150 people on a ward, and they want your attention, and if they can't, and we as social animals need to interact with people. We need to touch. We need to hug. Those type of yep. things, right? These poor people, when people go into these asylums and stuff like that, and they get their hair pulled and such, they're not, the spirits there who are doing it are not trying to be angry or mean. They're reaching out for that touch. They yep. want your attention. So when I hear these people, oh, I just got stressed. Oh, hell, get away. You know, why the hell did you go there for? You know, I mean, you know, it's not, you know, it's not a day, you know, and that's, it's not a day in the park for God's sake. People need to read about why these people were in these state hospitals. They yep. do. And for me personally, being in state hospitals that had wall-to-wall people and trying to do what we needed to do to help them. You know what I mean? I yep. mean, but there's only three workers on a ward with 150 people, and we have to feed them, we have to dress them, we had to do this, we had to do that. It's difficult to go to everyone and supply their emotional needs. I tried to. I really, really did. So when I go back, when I go into an asylum, whatever, I always go in there and tell the spirit I am there to help them. If they want to reach out to me, I understand that. If they mm-hmm. accidentally scratch me, hey, that's fine. That's fine with me. You know what I mean? But these people who don't do any history about places that they go into, they really need to. They do. And they should respect. They should respect those folks that were in there. Also, what really pisses me off, that you go to these places where homes for these people, right? And they make them into a Halloween attraction. I mean, God bless them. Everybody has to make a buck. I understand that, right? But they are just, you know, it would be like me going into your gentleman's houses, into your home, and making them a Halloween attraction. You know what I mean?
It wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the first time.
It wouldn't be the first time. We've had haunted houses in the past, but we did it for the kids for Halloween, you know, make it more fun for them. And kind of fun for us, because we got to watch the kids get scared a little bit, you know, of the things we did, and we always added to it. You know, we were pretty popular doing that. 4 or 5 years running.
Yeah. And we had good enough of haunted houses that we put together. We had adults crying when they came out.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt that was a personal achievement.
Yeah.
And I understand that people want to make stocks, and God bless them. I understand that.
For it.
Oh, we didn't charge. We never charged for it.
Nobody for it. We did it just for fun.
Yeah, we did it okay. for fun.
Okay. We did it for
just
fun.
To have fun doing it.
And for the neighborhood, you know. Yeah. We didn't charge anybody, and we still gave out candy.
Yep.
They just had to have enough guts to get to the front door.
Right. And so that's great. But these places like Waverly Hills and these places in Ohio and all over the place, you know, and people flock to them. And but these are human beings that had to live there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
They had no choice.
No,
right.
No, they didn't. They need to be very respectful going in. But please, my brothers and sisters in the paranormal field, and you can disagree with me, and God bless you, okay? But if there's a fact, we need to be respectful when we go into these places, you know? So, but anyhow, so I've done many, many things within the paranormal field and helping people cross over, helping people through the grieving process and everything. And so I do many things within the paranormal field, and I'm so blessed in my life by having these abilities and by doing these podcasts. So thanks, guys, for having me on. I know I might be a bit outrageous. Anyhow, I am who I am. You know what I mean? You know? And
not what I expected.
And so I appreciate,
Definitely.
You what?
Not what I expected. Definitely not what I expected. I mean, I was reading your profile today, and you know, a medium, forensic psychologist, and devout Catholic. You know, and I'm going, okay, this is going to be interesting. I'm trying to figure out still, and this is my question to you, how do you balance all of that? You know, being a devout Catholic and you know, the way they feel about the paranormal field. And
right. And my spirituality is based on my Roman Catholicism, which is very important to me. My spirituality is every diocese in the country here in the United States, they have a senior priest or a monsignor. If someone is having some type of, you know, paranormal, possibly whatever, they can call the diocese and ask them to talk to a senior priest or a monsignor, because every diocese here in the country, they have to have some priest, monsignor, that knows something about the paranormal, okay? They have to know something. A lot of times, then, if the monsignor priest knows very little, then they will refer them to a priest or monsignor that may live in a different diocese. And that's the truth. So I combine my Roman Catholicism, my spirituality, you know, with that. You know what I mean? And the church, I mean, my church knows what I do. They have never condemned me to doing this whatsoever. Not at all. Not at all. And having these two exorcisms that I assisted, Father Michael was the one who did the exorcism on the house of the children in the demon house that Jack Bacon had in Indiana. Father Michael is a very, very good friend of mine, and he is the one who performed with other priests the exorcism of Kevin and of Vivian. So my church understands what I do. They understand what I do, and I've never been condemned by my church. Never.
That's good. Never. I'm glad to hear that they actually have an understanding.
And a lot of people, right. I know, like, a lot of people will read my bio because it's longer than a whore's dream. It's longer than a whore's Christmas list. And they'll say, oh, my God, how did I rectify all this other stuff? And, you know, with me being Italian and my spirituality and everything. But for me, it comes very easily. Very, very easily. I'm very upset with people. You know, I am who I am, you know. I like to have fun doing these podcasts. I really do. I mean, a lot of times I cry because, especially like working with the children that I do, and that's very painful to see a 6-year-old child dying right in front of you. You know what I mean?
Honestly, Robert, you know, I'm always trying to put that tough guy front up there and everything, you know. But when it comes to the kids, when it comes to children, dude. Do not mess with the kids in front of me. You will not like the person that comes out.
Right.
You know, I will pick on the kids if I know them. But if you do anything to harm a child in front of me, you definitely will not like the person that I become.
Right.
Because they are the most precious thing out there.
Oh, they are. Amen. You know, and so maybe another time that you guys have me back on, I can talk about being with these children in the very last moments of their lives, because it is incredible what they experience and what I experience and what the parents experience, you know?
Yeah. Well, and
you want to see a grown man cry? Then we'll talk about that, because yeah, I will start bawling, you know, like a baby.
I can't watch those commercials anymore. You see those commercials for St. Jude's?
St. Jude's, yeah.
Yeah, the St. Jude's commercials. Did you ever see those? I can't watch those anymore. I mean, I'm too close, and yeah, it brings tears every time I watch those commercials, because I know firsthand what some of those kids are going through.
Yeah.
Because I went through it personally. I fought cancer and survived.
Right.
So I know what they went through.
Right. And for me personally, which I don't mention a lot because it's not about me, I had colon cancer 10 years ago, and I beat that. But within And 3 weeks ago, my prostate cancer came back.
Ouch.
And so I had chemotherapy 2 weeks ago, you know. But you know what? Cancer doesn't define who I am. My heart does. Nope. Being gay doesn't define who I am. My heart does. Being a psychic medium doesn't define who I am. My heart does.
Yep.
You know? Yep. And let me tell you, I'm gonna live my life the way I am created to live, to help our brothers and sisters in need. And if somebody has a freaking problem with that, God bless them, but leave me the frick alone. You know what I mean? You know? So I love to have fun, and you know, because I'm human just like anyone else. I'm not greater or less than anyone else, you know. I fall short every day of my life in a lot of ways, you know. Every day to me is a learning experience. Okay.
Same. We got to think so, brain about you know, that. Go ahead.
Okay. So I want to share my journey in the paranormal field, just in case there is someone listening who still is in one of the phrases I use is paranormal closet, who is afraid to come out into the light and talk about their own journey. I know the closet being gay, and I was in the closet until I was 18, when I said the hell with it, because closets are closed places, they're closed and they're dark. I decided to come out into the light, my gay life, right? And it's just like the paranormal. There's a lot of our brothers and sisters who are scared, who are frightened, who have been ridiculed, who have been bullied. And I hope and I pray that these podcasts that I do will give them hope to come out into the light. Tell others, like you folks, the folks that I'm going to give shout outs to, to contact them. Contact me. I will, you know, and my number's everywhere. It really is, you know. And give these folks hope, because there is hope out there, you know. We're all here to learn. There's no expert. There's no right or wrong answers to a lot of these things, because each of us are on our own journey.
Yep.
And we can all learn from each other.
It's like when I started, I did what I felt was correct. That's how I started on my journey. If it felt correct, mm-hmm. I went ahead and went with it. I had the support of my mother. Because mm-hmm. my mom also had the ability to see spirits and mm-hmm. know things that she shouldn't have known.
Right.
Or that people said that she shouldn't have known.
Mm-hmm.
So right. Because of that, you know, for me growing up
in the 60s like I did, my parents knew of my abilities, my family did, and they were very, very accepting of that. They were just afraid that somebody else out of the family would hear that, and then all hell would break loose. You know what I mean? Because it was not the right time. It wasn't the right time. You know?
Well, during the times when you were born, I was born in 68. There was a lot of non-acceptance of the paranormal field. People didn't understand it. And that I think was the biggest thing. If they didn't understand it, they feared it, and if they feared it, they didn't want to know about it.
Right.
And I think that's what drove a lot of the problems that happened. Even during, you know, even back in the 1700s and 1800s, during the Salem witch trials, the reason that they were so adamant about wanting to destroy the witches is because they didn't understand it. They didn't understand what they were doing. Did I mute again?
you were very, very garbled. But I got the gist of what you said, you know? So I got the gist of what you said. And you know what? And people will say, you know, well, they're scared and they're fearful. And I say to them, it's not getting over the fear. It is understanding the fear. One has to understand the fear and where it comes from. You may not ever get over it. But what will help if you understand the fear, that is the name of the game, to understand the fear. It is.
Yeah.
So I have enjoyed myself tonight, you know, and
I've enjoyed having
At times I can be out. Oh, well, you know, so, you know, and at times I can be outrageous, but that's who I am. You know what I mean? I am. My life is very transparent. You know what I mean? So if you guys want me on again for another program or two or whatever, you know, so I'll leave that up to you. But again, thank you so very much. And I have some shout outs to do. Is that okay?
What's that?
Yeah,
can I give
out? Sure, and then okay. I gotta give our shout outs out before we close the show.
Okay, and also my telephone number is 309-213-0325, 309-213-0325. If you have any questions, if you have any, just want to talk, please give me a call, okay? I need to say hello to Michelle from Ohio. And Maria from Pennsylvania, Dreamwalker Paranormal, Night Watcher Paranormal from Australia. They're listening tonight. Dan cool. Beck, thank you. Ken Allen around the Wizard's Table. Oh my God, he's wonderful. And also Midnight Paranormal Society, Mike Cardenas, and that group with 101 Paranormal Education. Thank you so very much. I love you guys. There are so many other people that I could thank, but I want to thank everyone who is listening tonight, and I appreciate you gentlemen also. I had a wonderful time. You know, some podcasts that I've done, oh my God, it's like pulling teeth from these damn people that are wanting interviewing me. You know, it's like, what the hell? Let me talk. Let me do the thing. If you're afraid to ask me, hell, I'll just ramble on till the cows come home. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like I said, I'll ask you that first open question, and then if if anything comes up that I want to ask you or Joe wants to ask you, it'll come in. And if we've got viewers that want to ask you a question, they'll throw them up there, and then we'll bring them in if they're a feasible question. But other than that, we want to know about you. That's why we did this.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you so much. And Jay Hill, thank you so very much. I'll be on. In the last 10 days, I think I've done about 8 or 9 podcasts. And I thank everyone who's had me on. And again, it's not all about me. It's not. It's about my journey and helping someone else.
Exactly.
And also before I leave, my brothers and sisters, my motto has always been that we are spiritual beings in a physical body. Always remember that, okay? And also remember to love yourself so you can love someone else.
Okay, Joe.
All right. Next week, Wednesday, it'll be Donna Lee Wells Fink. She is the one that put together the first annual Beast of Bray Road conference that'll be held in Elkhorn later, I think, next month. I forgot the date. And after that, there won't be no show on Friday. Next week, there's no show. We are heading towards the Milwaukee Paranormal Conference to have some fun.
Yep, Milwaukee Paracon. We're going to go down there for the weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And it's still not too late to register because it's still free.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, again, thank you guys. I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us, Robert.
You're welcome. If you ever want me on again, just let me know.
I most definitely, because I want to know more about that profiling. You know, I know it's off topic, but we've talked about serial killers and stuff like that before in the past too. So.
Oh yeah. Actually, I would love to do a podcast again with you, and actually, like he said, talk about the Bundy one. I want to hear some of that. That man was kind of twisted. Mm-hmm. Everything I've ever read or seen about him, he was like really bad twisted.
Right. So. And so we can talk about Ted Bundy, talk about the interview that we had with him. And we were there 5 feet from him. Five feet.
All right, so that's a little tidbit, people. So next time we have Robert on, we're gonna be talking about that Ted Bundy.
And I will tell you things that is not on TV and it's never been written about him.
That'd be cool. So it'll be kind of a first.
Yep. Just remember though, anything's possible. So till next time, have a good evening.
Love you guys. Love, light, and peace to everyone.
Stay safe, everybody.
Amen.